Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the GAS program at the Institute. And it's my great pleasure to be joined today by Andrea Minor, who's research fellow at the OIS. And we're here today to discuss the key messages that came from his paper, Financing the Energy Transition, the Role, Opportunities and Challenges of Green Bonds, that was published by the Institute in the middle of February 2022. Andrea, welcome to the OIS podcast series.
Hello, David. It's nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me today.
Thank you. Well, look, why don't we start with a simple question? You know, what are green bonds and why have they attracted such a large interest?
Let me start by saying that green bonds, as the name suggests, are essentially financing instruments with a precise goal, providing capital to finance or refinance projects or assets which have environmental benefits. The type of projects that could be financed are generally broad in nature and may vary depending on the issuing company, but they include, among others, energy efficiency investments, renewable energy infrastructures, green bonds, green buildings, projects related to environmental, land, and water conservation, just to name a few examples. So from a market perspective, the first green bond has been issued by the European Investment Bank in 2007, and accounted for $600 million, and was called at the time a climate awareness bond, which focused on renewable energy and energy efficiency investments. We need to understand that actually the initial development of the market was mostly fueled by multilateral development banks, such as the European Investment Bank, the IBRD, and the World Bank, just to name a few of them. And only in 2013 signed the emergence of the first corporate issuances, and the market has been growing ever since, in particular following the 2015 Paris Agreement, which, as we know, has refocused the urgency and scale of the energy transition to avoid potential damages to economies and livelihood arising from climate change. From that perspective, green bonds are, as we say, an innovative instrument with a precise objective, which is to relatively new financial debt instrument.
Okay, so great. That's a good introduction. But why do we now dive into it in a bit more detail? You know, what is the state of the green bond market and what are the recent trends?
So as we know, the green bond market has actually been evolving rapidly in the last few years. And in particular, as I mentioned, after the Paris Agreement. I think it is useful to link the growth of the market with events which have been characterizing it. So 2013, as I mentioned, marks the first corporate issuances in green bonds, while 2014 coincided with the International Capital Market Association, which is also often referred as ICMA Association, publishing the first version of the Green Bond Principles, which is a market-led initiative to enhance transparency and standardization in the market. Finally, of particular importance are the regulatory and policy initiatives led by the EU in the context of sustainable finance and the energy transition. These are important because are set to provide also guidance for other jurisdictions, especially in developing countries. If we think about last year, in 2021, the EU unveiled its EU taxonomy, which is a rulebook for what defines a sustainable activity within the EU. At the same time, it also announced the EU Green Bond Standard, which is a green bond labeling framework. In its essence, similar to the green bond principles of ICMA, but is aligned with the EU taxonomy. This is expected to become the market standard in the coming years for green bonds, given also the leading role that the EU in terms of sustainable finance and in ambition in the energy transition. 2021 has also marked the achievement of approximately $1.5 trillion milestone of total issuance in the green bond market. The recent growth has been particularly characterized by strong sovereign issuance in developed countries, particularly in the Eurozone, the UK, and Nordic countries. In the BRICS countries, China is the most active jurisdiction, with up to $100 billion of total issuance to date. So the China is particularly interesting because China has been one of the first jurisdictions to provide significant policy support to the green bond market, with the People's Bank of China the Chinese central bank being particularly supportive for the development of the market. The green bond market has been growing fast, as you mentioned. Only in 2021, the total US dollar issuance has reached $500 billion and was primarily led by sovereign and government agency issuance, followed by utilities and financial corporates. Actually, on the corporate level, the majority of issuance have been originated in economic sectors, such as financials and utilities, which have to date a clearer path to net zeros, whereas issuance have been lacking in economic sectors, where decarbonization trajectories are less clear, i.e. for hard-to-abate sectors.
I have to say, I didn't realize, Andrea, that the growth had been so huge, as you've outlined. But can we elaborate a bit more on the instrument and ask, you know, how are the green bonds designed? And also, you know, how do you ensure that the environmental benefits that firms claim actually materialize?
Yeah, thanks, David, for asking this. It's actually an important point that is often misunderstood and is important to be discussed for green bonds and more in general with transition finance. So as I mentioned earlier, green bonds are debt-like financial instruments which have a specific objectives, which is providing capital to projects with positive environmental benefits. So in a typical green bond, raised capital is earmarked to a specific project or to refinance an existing project. In that sense, they are often referred as use of proceeds bonds, and in contrast with so-called general purpose bonds, which raise capital for generic corporate use. A few things are important further to clarify here, I think, for the audience. So first of all, green bond labels is a voluntary disclosure from green bond issuers, and at their discretion, they can reference the compliance to a green bond framework, such as the Climate Bond Initiative Green Bond Standard or the EU Green Bond Framework. However, as we know, in order to guarantee transparency, the market has moved in requiring third-party verification to the compliance of these green bonds with established frameworks. This third-party verification can take several forms, such as assurances, second-party opinions, and certification. Second, it is important to stress that green bond labels provide investors information with the environmental benefits of the projects to which funds are directed. And this is an important point. They do not provide an opinion about the greenness or the environmental profile of the issuer. And third, and important for investors, majority of green bonds are unsecured bonds, meaning that investors ultimately hold claim to the overall firm's operation in case of default of the issuer. There are some exceptions, of course, given that green bonds can take also other type of structures, such as project bonds, asset-based securities, and covered bonds, among others, in which investors actually have first right recourse to certain underlying assets set as collateral.
Okay, so let's talk for a minute about the costs and benefits of green bonds, specifically from a issuer perspective. You know, what are the incentives for the issuers then?
So there was actually an interesting publication in 2021 by the Climate Bond Initiative, which published an interesting report on a survey they conduct collecting feedbacks from corporate treasurers in relation to the drivers for green bond issuance and the perceived costs and benefit they bring to the firm. Among the major benefits highlighted by the issuers are, first, strong demand in green bonds from institutional investors, which often led to green bond primary market issuance to be oversubscribed. The strong demand from institutional investors has often implied that, especially in primary markets, prices for green bonds appear to settle higher compared to otherwise equivalent vanilla bonds. This observation has led to a broader debate on whether market observers have called the greenium, i.e. the pricing difference between green bonds and otherwise similar conventional bonds in primary market transactions. Second, issuers argue that green bonds issuance has given them access to a more stable and long-term investor base, especially with when these investors are ESG-driven institutional investors. And finally, there is an additional argument in relation to the cost of capital for firms with credible decarbonization strategies and which are lower emitting companies. There are several actually evidences about carbon emissions attracting an equity premium in US public companies, as investors demand compensation for holding firms which may be actually subject to climate-related risk, in particular in relation to climate transition policies.
Okay, so Andre, you've talked about the institutional investors, so why don't we talk about them for a minute? So from a credit perspective, do they provide a hedge against environmental risks?
Yes, this is actually an important point and is also often misunderstood. So the strong demand from ESG-driven investors comes not as a surprise if we just think that the US Forum for Sustainable and Responsible Investment reported a total of $17 trillion, which are invested or reconcilable to sustainable investment mandates as of 2020, compared to only $600 million in 2010. The strong change in preferences from consumers and an increase in ESG mandates have led to a strong inflow of capital to ESG-related funds, investments, instruments with ESG profile, and ultimately to green bonds and projects. So green bonds, of course, represent, in that respect, an ideal instrument for ESG-conscious investors who are willing to build exposure on the fixed income market. In that process, actually, the standardization and transparency building in the green bond market has been pivotal. The emergence of market-led initiatives for certification and second-party opinions have certainly helped reduce information asymmetries in the market and support the strong demand. An important element of discussion is, as you mentioned in your question, is whether exposure to green bonds provides a hedge against environmental risk, and most notably on climate transition risk, using the terminology of the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. In 2017, actually, an interesting paper by BIS economists in Basel raised a similar question. They argue, linking green bond issuance to the economic sectors of their issuers, that most of green bonds, especially those issued by companies which need to drastically transform their business model, carry substantial environmental risk, given the type of business exposure, the general operation of the issuing company.
Okay, so can we just talk for a minute about regulation? Because, you know, we can see that the market is certainly evolving rapidly. So I was just wondering, what is the current state of regulation and, you know, policy initiatives around green bonds?
So the case of green bonds has been quite particular because it's one of these cases in which market-led initiatives to promote transparency and standardization have actually anticipated regulatory and policy initiatives in the market. As I've mentioned earlier in the podcast, actually 2013 was an important year as the ICMA Association published its first version of the Green Bond Principles, i.e. a set of rules with the objective of promoting transparency and standardization in the green bond market. Actually, to date, several regulatory initiatives around sustainable finance have emerged globally, with green bonds being an important component of it. The EU has been one of the most active jurisdictions in this context, but certainly not the first one. An interesting case is indeed the one of China, which has been particularly active in setting a regulatory and policy framework around sustainable finance. These initiatives often share a common structure and provide frameworks in terms of, first, a taxonomy, which provides the definition of what are green assets and activities, and second, a framework for green bond labeling in compliance with the local jurisdiction taxonomy. According to recent data collected by climate bond initiatives, there is actually a strong growth in regulatory initiatives and guidance on sustainable finance globally. However, it is important to mention that whereas local jurisdiction taxonomies and frameworks are important, especially for developing economies, they are a source of risk from the view of global investors. The heterogeneity in definitions and labels represents a challenge for investors who would instead benefit from harmonization and cross-boundary standardization. In that sense, actually, initiatives such as the International Platform on Sustainable Finance aim at fostering dialogue and harmonization between regulators and policymakers on sustainable finance. In November 2021, as part of this IPSF initiative, they published a report with in-depth comparisons between the EU taxonomy on one hand and the China taxonomy on the other hand, with the objective, indeed, of providing comparability and interpretability between the two taxonomies.
Now, in your report, you note that the EU has been kind of particularly active on this subject. So I was wondering, you know, what are the main aspects to look into on that respect?
The EU has been very active in establishing a solid regulatory and policy landscape on sustainable finance. So there are notable initiatives, and first, the enhanced reporting for climate-related risk and impacts, such as the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive proposal and the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation. And second, the EU taxonomy, as I mentioned, which is a rulebook on what defines a sustainable asset and process within the EU. The EU taxonomy has entered into force in January 2022 and includes six environmental objectives, which are related to climate mitigation and adaptation. Given that it established an EU regulation, as is often the case, the document reflects high-level negotiation within the EU member states. In the case of the EU taxonomy, actually, negotiations mostly were related to the different types of transition strategies to which member states have committed. This has been actually clear in relation to the recent discussions around the role of gas and nuclear in February 2022. It recognized the role of mobilizing investments on certain gas and nuclear activities in the transition, while remaining subject to clear limits and phase-out periods. These initiatives will be particularly needed to reduce power generation from more polluting sources, such as coal. Along the EU taxonomy, on June 2021, the EU Commission has announced the EU Green Bond Standard, a EU-level green bond framework, which leverages on the recently established EU taxonomy and is expected to become a standard in the EU green bond market.
Okay, so therefore, you know, what are the main issues with green bonds then? You know, and, you know, what other financing instruments have emerged that could work with or against the green bonds?
Well, you know, green bonds, similarly to other initiatives and financial instruments, can be part of the solution to bring more capital to the energy transition, but they are no silver bullet. The major strength of green bond in ensuring environmental benefits are its eligibility criteria on the projects that can be financed. So the relatively strict eligibility of green bond standards often falls outside of business models of most of the economic sectors, which are high emitting sectors. This is particularly the case of hard to abate sectors, given the current technology available. As such, also in light of the need of these economic sectors to pursue decarbonization strategies, alternatives have emerged which could match the need for capital towards hard to abate sectors, but at the same time ensuring that the raised capital is used to support a credible decarbonization strategy and have positive environmental benefits. So the recent growth of so-called sustainability-linked bonds and loans goes exactly in this direction and is certainly a market to look closely in 2022, as it has been growing very strongly in 2021. Other instruments which are worth mentioning, but which closely follow the structure of green bonds, are the so-called social and sustainability bonds. Similarly to green bonds, social and sustainability bonds are use of proceeds bonds, which target projects with social benefits in the case of social bonds, and a mix of social and environmental benefits in the case of sustainability bonds. They have also both experienced a strong growth in the last years, especially supported by issuance from sovereign in the EU as part of capital raise to counteract the negative effects of the COVID-19 shocks on EU economies and support a just energy transition.
So as I come to the end of the podcast, Andrea, you know, I always like to end with a kind of forward-looking question. So can I ask you, you know, What is the future of green bonds? And can you perhaps elaborate on the functioning of sustainability-linked bonds, or SLBs, and their relationship with the energy transition?
Absolutely. I think green bonds and transition finance is, in general, yet to show its full potential. We are in a phase in which countries and firms are still building capacity and planning investments to achieve the decarbonization targets. So last year, especially the period preceding COP26, has seen a strong growth in countries and companies' commitments to net zero. This is expected to materialize with a strong growth in investments and also in carbon markets for offsetting some of these emissions. But on the investment side, firms will find beneficial to use green bonds to raise funds for the reasons we have been mentioning during the podcast. Furthermore, we now see how the current investments in the new green technology, in energy efficiency and infrastructure, still fall short of the estimated capital needed to achieve the Paris Agreement goals. Green bonds, along with social and sustainability bonds, will continue to reach capacity and are expected also to grow in emerging markets, which are also building capacity in terms of more robust regulatory and policy frameworks around sustainable finance. But coming back to your previous point on sustainability-linked bonds, those are certainly the most important innovation from a financing perspective to be aware of in the energy sector. First of all, sustainability-linked bonds, differently from green bonds, are general-purpose finance instruments, meaning that the capital raised can be used at the firm discretion and is not constrained or to be earmarked to a specific project. Second, sustainability-linked bonds are structured in a way to link the financial terms to the achievement of firms' level decarbonization targets. So in a typical sustainable linked bond, the financial terms of the bond include terms according to which the coupon attached to the bond is increased or decreased following the achievement of certain sustainability and or ESG objectives. So without entering too much into the details here, two main elements constitute the terms of a typical SLB. So first of all, the so-called key performance indicators, which defines the environmental measures used to assess the credibility and ambition of the stated goals. And second, what are called sustainability performance targets, which effectively set up targets in relation to these KPIs. Examples of structures in a SLB market are revaluations of coupons, such as step-ups and discounts in case of miss or achievement of sustainability performance targets. These instruments have the advantage of leaving flexibility for firms and at the same time to allow firms in hard-to-abate sectors to achieve financing terms with incentives to reduce emissions along their value chain. Finally, as of first half of 2021 only, a total of $33 billion of sustainability-linked bonds were issued, accounting for approximately 6% of labeled bonds issuance in the same period, according to Climate Bond Initiative's report. These figures show the potential for this segment, and further growth is expected in 2022.
Well, Andrea, thank you very much. You know, we've now come to the end of the podcast, but I have to say, I feel optimistic that the future sounds very bright for the use of green bonds as supporting the energy transition. And it was really great to have a conversation that certainly builds on the messages from your paper, Financing the Energy Transition, the Role, Opportunities and Challenges of Green Bonds. Now, I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org. Thank you.